Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Zone Time. I'm Julian alongside Sam. Justin Cuthbert is here. Omar is also in the house as well, fresh off in the mentions. How is it doing that live show, by the way? I tried to keep that on after the Leafs game, which I'm pretty sure you were very happy about. Trust the process. Go Leafs, go. Okay, that's a very reasonable thing to put up on a board. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Doing it was cool. I mean, doing it in the mentions has been cool all year. And again, doing it live, I think, was really sick. And, you know, the chat was great. There are a lot of good questions, and, you know, the game, like that, there's a lot to talk about. So it was solid. It was great. Thank you. If you're listening to this and we're on the stream, that's awesome. And, you know, hope to see and hear you and, you know, see all the comments for game two.
Look at Omar just being a humble superstar, Sam. Look at Omar being a humble superstar.
I'm impressed.
I try. Thanks.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, some people have big inflated egos when they do these shows, but not you, Omar, at least not yet. Anyway, I wanted to
ego if Wayne Simmonds followed me on Twitter.
That's very true. That is very true. Wait, not everyone here has Wayne Simmonds follow them on Twitter, unlike someone here. So, Omar, congratulations. You have that, have a live show going for you.
Yeah, that was cool. And, hopefully maybe one day he'll see one of the moments where he does something and it's captured. And it's like, hey, cool. That's awesome. That's sick. For example, like his whole skating away from the scrum from game one is something that's blowing up a lot. So I think that's actually pretty funny to see in the playoffs how a lot of clips kind of go over the place, like, and they end up on TMZ, for example. Something from last night ended up on TMZ. Yeah, literally the Riley fight with Ruda. There was a TMZ post about it. So
really,
yeah.
Even TMZ is into just a Toronto. Really? That's
The weirdest hockey things end up on TMZ. Like,
yeah.
Super weird.
I'm sure the TMZ, maybe someone in that office, a few people in that office are probably like, I mean, it's in California. So maybe they have like Kings fans or mm-hmm. get to the Kings at some point, but like California fans, it's not above them to do hockey, I guess. But like,
yeah,
it's interesting that they would put that there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always is, but hey. You know,
yeah, there's a little shock value with Jan Ruta bleeding and all that stuff. It's maybe that's what gets them going. They are
that's true.
You know, they're into the salacious stuff, so maybe that hits the bucket for them. I have no idea.
I was about to say, has hockey gotten so soft to everybody that like if blood appears once, that has to be TMZ worthy? I don't know. Okay, there's a segment I wanted to do that's pretty much going to take up most of the time of this episode. I'm going to read off a statement, and you are all going to tell me if it's an overreaction or not. These are not necessarily my thoughts. These are just thoughts that I figure maybe people are thinking of right now. So I'm going to throw out a line, and you all just tell me if it's an overreaction or not. Let's see if we can get this first one out the way. Plan the parade. The Leafs are winning the Stanley Cup. Is this an overreaction?
Yeah, well, that's an overreaction, 100%. Like, as
I got worried, you were shaking your head. I thought you were going to be like, no, it's not.
no, that's an overreaction, man. Like, as listen, okay, game one was sick. I was swearing the entire time because, like, I make the joke all the time that, like, you know, I wonder how what the universe is like where, like, the Leafs are good in the playoffs. Like, I wonder what that looks like. And, like, game one was, like, a glimpse of that. But I'm not going to say that, like, they won the series from, like, one game, man. Like Tampa, if anything, like, game two, I think will be a lot more indicative of how the rest of the series will go. And if the Leafs can continue playing the way that they played in game one and game two, I think that will be a secure thing. But, like, listen, man, let's just win a round first before that starts getting thrown out. So, like, I know a lot of Leafs fans are hyped and excited, but, like, that's an overreaction for sure.
Okay. I mean, it's definitely an overreaction, but, like, it's less of an overreaction than it was if said 24 to 48 hours prior, right? I mean, We're looking at probabilities. They're a little bit more likely to get through Tampa and thus a little bit more likely to get through into the Stanley Cup final. I mean, they're really, 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 really good team. Like, pretty, pretty impressive what they did. I'm having a hard time, like, gauging what exactly Tampa is. I know we understand the standard that they set, but are they prepared to do it again? Did the Leafs beat a team last night that just doesn't have the horses this year? I'm not really sure, but I'm really having trouble poking holes in this Leafs team at this point. They looked really, really exceptional in game one, and I think they can keep it going for a bit.
I'm with Omar. I think it's a massive overreaction, but that being said, that was an objectively fun game to watch, and I took a lot of crap from people other than Leafs fans for saying they were the dark horse last week and then last night tweeting that they were fun. But I stand by it. Like, that was a fun game to watch. And I'm here for fun hockey. Like, I'm not going to just, you know, it's fun to make the same joke about the Leafs every year, but it's way more fun to actually see a good hockey game.
Yeah. There are a lot of non-Leafs fans who I will say were pissed of how that game went. Whether they actually said it in those words or not, I can tell there was a large portion of hockey Twitter that were not too pleased with how that game went. And we had a certain account that said, "Oh, the fix is in. I'm done watching. Which, give me a break."
Whoa, 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 whoa! Who's that certain account? Put some name. Put your name on it. Put the name on
Mark
it.
Mark Mathot tweeted that the fix Mark is Mathot? In, and I'm done watching. And it's like,
what,
man? Like, the fix is in. What the heck does that even mean? Well, like, what? The game was rigged for the Leafs to win that way? It was rigged? Like, every time I see things like rigged and the Leafs using the same sentence, it makes me so mad. Show me the cups then if things are rigged. There was literally a goal. It was 6-0. There was a goal last night where the puck crossed the line. And they said it wasn't a goal. So, I don't know. I don't know, like, what fix we're talking about.
I feel like you can't make the joke that they can't get out of the first round every year and then at the same time be like, the league is trying to fix things in favor for them. Like, these things are not
consistent. After one win, you're going that hard.
After one win.
Speaking of overreactions, I think that is the overreaction
here. Oh, my gosh. Jeez.
They also had seven. They were shorthanded for 7 of the first 13 minutes of the game. That's not exactly... that's the strategy used to fix the game. It's pretty flawed,
right? Like, geez, man, God.
I'm sorry, I missed that Mark Mathot tweet. I didn't realize that someone was already insinuating that the game was jigged or was rigged, I should say. Yeah. Wow, the Leafs are hard done by. But gotta say, I feel for y'all. Anyway, what about this one? There will be no three-peat for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Is that an overreaction to say after one game? They're not going to win it this year.
Less of an overreaction, I think, than the Leafs because, you know, again, probabilities, I guess, sort of be the one bringing up probabilities. But, like, this team's been through a lot. They've been through a lot over the past 2 years. They've played a lot of hockey. They're still a good team. They're still a great team. They still might be the best team. But even being the best team isn't always promised in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So, you know, they could still get to 16 wins for sure. But it's maybe the most difficult path with the Leafs and then Florida and then whoever comes out of the Metro and maybe Colorado on the other side. Like, if they did it again, it might even be more impressive than the other two Stanley Cups that they've won. But they are 16-0 after a loss in recent history, and they're going to have a chance to prove that again.
When did you become a numbers guy?
I don't know. Don't you have to be in this? Don't you have to be in this industry? It's like, we're just, it's always numbers, isn't it? I'm just like scanning charts all last night, trying to run through my game story. It's just, you gotta live with the times, I guess.
Hey, yeah, he's like short of Dom LeChizen over here.
I agree with that. I mean, I think it's one game. It's one game, and you know, like, or it's only a matter of time before the cliche of, you know, you don't lose the series until you lose a game at home, cliche starts getting used. So there's so much hockey left to be played, and you know, you have to expect that, you know, Tampa's gonna bounce back from what we saw in game one. Again, that's not to take anything away from what the Leafs did, and I think that's what we're seeing a lot, which is a little frustrating, and that it's not that the Leafs won, it's that Tampa lost. And a lot of people are saying like, oh, you know, Tampa just wasn't at their best. Or John Cooper was like, oh, you know, you don't want to give off freebies in the playoffs, but you know, we gave that one, like, man, come on, like that. I hope the Leafs at least see that quote. So yeah, I think it's way too early to say that that the three-peat is off or whatever. It can still happen. But if it doesn't happen, I don't think it'll be this series that prevents it. Like to Justin's point, it's going to be a tough path to get there.
Shout out Omar for being so well-reasoned and not taking the bait at all to just lose his mind over this one game. This is very well, like, dialed back here. Like, if the Leafs win game two, it's going to be very different, I think. But, like,
no.
Man.
I need to see the advance word for me to. I have a short-term memory, Julian. I've seen things. I've seen many things, haunting things, if you will. You know what they did? You know what they did in the opener? I'm sorry, I just have to get this up. The opening little segment to the playoffs. You know what they showed?
They showed
May 2013. I don't need to see that. I don't need to see James Reimer on the ice after the first game seven. I don't need to see that. I'm trying to get hyped and excited for the game. Why are you doing that to me? Why? So you know. So and I think that was done to remind us that things can happen, not in a pessimistic way, just that, you know, things can take place. So I'm going to take it. I'm going to do the hockey cliche thing. I'm going to take it one game at a time. They win game two, sick. They win game three, cool. They win in game four, then that's where I go full unhinged.
Whoa, we'll see.
Not calling for a sweep. I'm not saying it's going to be a sweep, but you know. If the four
that's
wins.
That's what it kind of sounds like, the way you describe it.
No, there's no way it's going to be a sweep. But all kidding aside, like I need the four wins to start to lose it a little bit. So
okay,
good thing we have live shows to test this level of composure that he's the standard that he wants to maintain here.
Who does the 10-year retrospective of May 2013 first? Yahoo Sports or some other outlet?
Probably The Athletic.
All right, Sam, let me throw this one at you. Andrei Vasilevskiy isn't the same dominant goalie we thought he was.
I think that's an overreaction after game one, although I did say in our group chat, are we sure Vasilevsky's in net tonight? Because
yes, we did ask that question. We did, because I he looked like if the Monstars were looking for hockey players, they sucked the powers from Andrei Vasilevskiy. He looked like
human
Mike Smith, actually.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I think in general, making any kind of bold statement after one game is an overreaction, and that's definitely an overreaction. You know, goalies are voodoo. He's entitled to have a bad game. Maybe he has one bad game and goes on a run. Like, that's something Vasilevskiy could absolutely do. So I think that's an overreaction.
Okay. Yeah, definitely an overreaction, but I mean, because this guy's, when do goaltenders hit their prime? 27, 28? That's what Andrei Vasilevskiy is. He's 27, turning 28, so he should be in his prime. However, he might need 4 months to just rest the legs a bit. Maybe that's reality. Maybe he's not going to be as good as he was the last two runs because he's been through so many games and played so much hockey lately. So perhaps he's not Vasilevskiy of 2020 and 2021 in 2022.
Yeah. I mean, like, how many, like, full-on split saves across the crease can you make before you just say, hey, I think I need a break? But, you know, I agree. I think it is a little bit of an overreaction. I think we should expect Vasilevskiy to be better, and hopefully the Leafs are prepared for that.
Okay, last one off the Lightning-Leaf series. Mitch Marner has exercised his playoff demons. Is that an overreaction?
No, he has.
Yeah.
That goal was big. Yep. That was a huge, huge, huge goal.
The chain swinging as he scored that. That was that's one of the most swaggy goals I've seen in the
playoffs. Literally.
I mean, he needed that so badly. And I think honestly, it's not just that. Like, that's the thing that I think he stews over, the fact that he doesn't, like, I literally think he tried to change his game. I'm not scoring enough goals. And he's like, I want to score more. I want to be that player, when really you're such a talented offensive player. You don't need to do that. But I feel like all that noise would get to a player like Marner. He silenced the noise before it could begin with that goal and 3 points. But his importance, and that it was written all over that game, goes well beyond goal scoring and production. Him and David Kampf on that number one penalty kill, there was no more important tandem or sequence or whatever than those two players on that power play for the Tampa Bay Lightning. This guy does everything for the Leafs. And the fact that he could get that monkey off his back should liberate him. I think he's exercised his demons, and he should be the Mitch Marner that we expect throughout this entire series.
Okay. So we know that is, I think, Cuthbert, you've said enough. All right, okay. Let's go to this one.
Fair.
Mike Smith has finally wilted back into a pumpkin. He enters the playoffs with 9 straight wins and then does what he did against the LA Kings, giving away that puck and allowing all those goals. Is Mike Smith, is it over? Is he a pumpkin?
Please, Sam, please go. I've been waiting for this. Sam.
I don't think that's an overreaction. I think I went into this season expecting him to be a pumpkin. I'm impressed with his season. The dude, he's 41. He's 41. I mean, maybe he's not fully wilted yet. I still haven't seen Mike Smith throw his head back and dive like he's capable of doing. So until he has a full on Mike Smith flop, he's not fully pumpkin yet, but I think that's coming soon.
There's some resentment in that.
He's got to be like the best diver in the league. I mean, and by best, I mean most dramatic.
I wonder if you're not in the camp that says it's Timmy Stützle who has that honor?
No, it's Mike Smith. Look at the longevity. Look at, like, you could have years of Mike Smith flops. They're glorious.
Best diver and best pizza delivery guy, too. I mean, I think this guy just gets so hyped up, and I think he just loses focus. Like, he wants to be the difference, but really, if he just settles down and stops being Mike Smith, it would be the best thing for the Oilers. I guess the best thing for the Oilers would not having Mike Smith as their number one goaltender. But this guy just can't help himself, it seems. And game one was another example of that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think the aspect of, I don't know if like Mike Smith was like consciously trying to like grab the spotlight or whatever, but like at that game, it's 3-3. It's, the third period's winding down. It's just, there's just no need for that. There's no need for that play. And the fact that that's a game winner,
it's a hero move.
Yeah, 100%. And like, it's unnecessary. And if I'm, it's game one, but like, if I'm like McDavid or like McDavid, especially after what we saw from McDavid, oh my God, like, especially after that, I'm like, dude, what the heck? Like, there's just no need for it. Like, there's no need for like the theatrics, I guess. Like, yes, like Mike Smith has made a career of playing the puck and stuff, but like sometimes, a lot of times, actually, less is more. And like, man, like I am really interested to see how the rest of that series goes because I hope for Mike Smith's sake that is not the one moment that we're talking about, after the first round when it comes to the Oilers.
The best tweet I saw last night was somebody say, you'd think a goalie who came into the league with Sergei Zubov on his team would let his defense handle the puck.
Do you see the tweet from Greg Ballack? It's like the photo of him just as he loses the puck. It says, guess where Mike Smith went with this puck? And he has a clear defenseman to his left.
It's like just a dotted line.
He didn't send it there. Oh, my God. Oh, that's tough. That's really funny. Okay. How about this next one? Connor McDavid scored a top 10 goal of his career in that LA Kings game in game one. I say yes. That totally was. That's one of the best goals he scored. Just going end to end, cutting through. Maybe not as impressive as the one he scored against the Rangers or a few other ones, but I think I'm willing to put that in the top 10 considering the playoff stakes, considering the finish, considering the speed, everything. I don't think that's an overreaction to say it's among his best. I know he's done similar ones. It's not number one. It's not even top five, but I'm putting it in the top 10.
Yeah, I agree with that 1,000%. I think it's the context is important. Like, we've seen McDavid go end to end in the regular season, you know, Rangers.
Patrick Nemeth.
The Rangers wasn't end to end, but you know, it was still a solid one. And like
neutral McDavid, zone. Yeah, it was nice.
McDavid doing that in the playoffs, man. Like, that's completely different because, again, like, the conversation is, oh, you know, can McDavid use his skill in the playoffs? And maybe McDavid has to, you know, start, you know, play more grit and stuff. I'm John Tortorella and skill doesn't work in the playoffs. So like seeing that
impersonation.
Yeah, I know, I try. So doing that end to end in the playoffs, I think is just great to see that, or not to say that like it needed proving, but just if you need proof or evidence that Connor McDavid hockey can work and is as exciting in the playoffs as is in the regular season, like that goal is a pure evidence of that. So that was wicked solid, not an overreaction at all.
Omer, you're the one who tracks the Ray Ferraro moans, right?
Oh yeah. Ray Ferraro has first off, love Ray Ferraro, like literally like my favorite color commentator in the game. Like, amazing. I love the fact that he just like wants to see goals and like hates when like coaches like shut things down. He's hilarious. And Ray Ferraro has done a thing where he literally moans if Austin Matthews like or any like skilled player does something great. Like, it started with Matthews like getting this disgusting snipe on Malcolm Subban. Whatever. And it's hilarious. Like, there's actually like the compilation of like the times where like Ray Ferraro like has like these like exciting reactions to goals, which is awesome, which is sick. So that's the context of Ray Ferraro. Love Ray Ferraro. He's awesome.
So I'll say I think it's an overreaction because it was probably 4 moans out of 5 for me. I think he's got 5 out of 5 moans previously in his career. But it was pretty special. And it should have been a reminder to Mike Smith that, you know, maybe just let that guy handle the puck.
Can that be the title of this clip? 4 out of 5. That's so hilarious.
Yo, okay. There are children who listen to this podcast, I'm sure.
Oh, I hope we can actually edit some moans into this.
from
Ray Ferraro.
You're a brat. You know how things go down. Color, you don't need to do this.
The color commentator
enjoying hockey skills.
Yes.
Nothing beyond
that. Yes. Oh, that's exactly what he meant. Clearly, he's just enjoying how the game goes. And
when you rate it,
that.
When you rate and review this podcast, 5 moans out of 5, please.
Yeah, 100%. Yes. One moan thumbs up on YouTube. Only positive moaning comments on the comment section. All that stuff.
You know, feel free to moan as long as you want to. Absolutely. Do that. Do all
you've
the moans.
You've gone down a rabbit hole.
Hilarious. Hey, look, man. Look, I'm not above people moaning at all. Do what you need to do to
enjoy
to
hockey.
What you need to do. Enjoy hockey. Get off on enjoying hockey.
Yes, Conrad Bach.
What?
I'm sorry, it was right there. It was right.
We're off the rails so far, I don't even think we can see the rails anymore.
This is not where I thought this was going when he started with the most.
No, I even went farther than I thought I was going to go. Now it's just completely.
Hey, Omar, how many moans do you think Ray would give this segment?
Oh, my God. I'd say 7 moans out of 10.
Oh, 7 moans out of 10? Wow. Are we not doing a good enough job?
I said Nash would punch you in the face, though.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Oh my god.
Okay. All right. We are a podcast. We are professional at what we do. Some of us have jobs that go beyond talking about someone moaning on air. Sure. So let's get back into this segment. I almost can't read the next one. Philip Deneau is the best defensive forward in the playoffs right now.
I'll say it's not an overreaction because I think he kind of proved that or illustrated that last year with obviously his run with the Montreal Canadiens. It was kind of like a full demonstration from I'm still on Mona. It was a full performance from Phil Deneau in game one. It wasn't just defensive prowess.
Yeah.
He is exceptional and defensive ability is his thing. So he's probably up there. I think David Camp is up there too for all the Leaf fans and in the mention listeners and viewers.
Yeah. Philip Deneau was all over the Edmonton Oilers, man. Ray Ferraro would have loved his performance. I think three even strike goals from his line in game one.
Yeah.
One shot between McDavid and Draisaitl when he went up against them for over 8 minutes against them. Like, Philip Deneau,
he's pretty good.
Four out of five bones. One more time. Okay.
Deneau is the center that you want in the playoffs on your team, like 100%. And I guess, and you know, to the point from last year, we've seen, you know, different evidence. The fact that, you know, the Kings are so willing to throw him out against McDavid or Draisaitl in any of those situations. I think he's really has established, or he really has become that player that the Montreal Canadiens thought he would be when they initially traded for him from Chicago. And I know initially people were like, oh, who the heck is this guy? He doesn't score too many goals, but he was a defensive person. And like, okay, well, where's the defense? And I think he's finally kind of blossomed into that shutdown, reliable center that you can throw in any situation when the games are at their highest stake. So, yeah, not an overreaction at all. Like, Philip Deneau is a ridiculous player. And, you know, I would love to have him on the team. So, you know, seeing him compared to David Camp is pretty solid.
Yeah, I agree. Not an overreaction. I think Harmandale did the numbers, but in his head-to-head time on ice last night against McDavid and Draisaitl, they had one shot on goal the entire time that he was on the ice. That's absurd. Yeah.
Wild.
Can you imagine being the GM that said, you know what, I'm not going to re-sign you to a contract this past offseason?
I'll just take a job with your new team.
Yeah,
Mark.
Save money that way.
Yeah,
I mean, the better one might be like, was he the single best addition the entire season?
I think he is.
Yeah,
like Jack Eichel switched teams, but not having the impact that Phil Deneau's having right now.
Mm-hmm. Phil Deneau had he had his career best in goals in the regular season. He's never scored that many goals. He outscored everyone on the Montreal Canadiens, I'm pretty sure. Dude, he's legit. And I'm going to make it right now. He's winning the Selke next year. I'm saying it right now. Okay. He's winning the Selke next year. Maybe that's not a hot take. Let me just get that out now, because there are a lot of other good players out there. He's winning the Selke trophy next year. Let's put it out there.
Yeah. Well, I remember there was a conversation about that, even like when he was still on the Canadiens. I think it was the year that Sean Couturier won. But like that year, I want to say his shot suppression stats were wild, were like really good. So I think even back then, people were still having the conversation on whether, you know, he can get a kind of a Selke nomination here or there. But we talk about Patrice Bergeron and how he's like literally like Selke man. Like he's literally in the Selke conversation every single year. And I think Deneau is well on, if not already in that position of being considered a Selke every single year.
All right, let's move on to these final two here. The Minnesota Wild, they got walloped in that first game against the St. Louis Blues. Maybe they should just use Cam Talbot for the rest of their playoff series.
Overreaction. I mean, I didn't watch any of the game, to be perfectly honest.
I did.
But Marc-Andre Fleury he's about this playoff life. He has his ups and downs, but if someone's going to be like that dynamic force that changes what might be the sort of fate that isn't going the way that Minnesota wants it to go, if St. Louis is the better team, who's going to step in and maybe reverse that trend? I think Marc-Andre Fleury has that ability, where Cam Talbot has been really solid behind a really good structured team all year. But which can be better than average or better than the other when push comes to shove? I think it can be Fleury, even if night one didn't go particularly well for him.
I think it's an overreaction after night one. I'm with Kathy. You never really count out Fleury after the first game, but it depends if it's, you know, which version of Marc-Andre Fleury in the playoffs are you getting? Are you getting the guy who lost his job to Tristan Jarry, to Matt Murray, or are you getting the guy who dragged the Golden Knights to the Stanley Cup Finals in their first season?
But they were good guys. He is very much a goaltender where you have to, it's like the stock market maybe, where you have to like read when it's going to fall off the cliff or when it's about to, spike or whatever. He's the type of guy that just like really trends up and down, and you can catch a wave with him or you can put all your eggs in one basket and it can burn you. So maybe this is that situation, but I think that spike could be around the corner.
Yeah. See, okay. Here's another example of why Sam is 100% accurate. That should be on the shirt, because literally, like, okay, it is not talked about enough how Marc-Andre Fleury ruined the Winnipeg Jets. The Winnipeg Jets were literally like destined to make the Stanley Cup final that year. Everyone was following them. And then one Marc-Andre Fleury said, "You will not score, you will not pass." And they lost, and everyone was shocked. And literally Marc-Andre Fleury willed that team. So to Sam and Justin's point, it just comes down on, do we believe that Fleury has it in him to do that again in the playoffs? Or do you kind of read the tea leaves and maybe switch up a little bit? I agree with everyone else. I do think it's a little of an overreaction, is because we have seen Fleury have that ability to literally shut things down and give his team a chance to score. And Minnesota has the offensive threats to do so. So after game one, I think it's way too early to just write it off. And if I'm Minnesota, I'm banking on that Fleury coming out at some point. And then maybe that is what can, you know, actually send you to a deep playoff run. Who knows?
Yeah. You know, it's crazy too. The Winnipeg Jets, not in the playoffs. A lot of questions to be asked about their core and everything else going forward from coaching on down. That series, that time against the Vegas Golden Knights, that's the best they had ever looked in the last how many years. And I really thought that they were going to go far, and they have not been able to replicate that ever since.
No.
Omar has a point. Marc-Andre Fleury ruined the Winnipeg Jets. We don't talk about that enough. And I'm very glad you brought that up on Zone Time.
Yeah. It's wild, man. And again, like the seeing like what the Jets were before and then what they are now, and hearing all like the postseason quotes and stuff and all the other stuff. And
Paul Maurice knew.
I'm with Cuthbert too. Paul Maurice knew something was up. You can't tell me that man said, "You know what? I really want to just be alone fishing for the next how many months." He knew he couldn't get anything out of that core. He did everything he could. Something was up with that. Something was up with that team. He knew, and he said, "I need to get the hell out of here."
You know
something
who else is knew? Up with that team. Dustin Bufflin.
Yeah,
Dustin Bufflin knew
yes.
too. He knew too. Something was up with that team. There's something up with that Winnipeg Jets team, man. I used to be big believers in them. Something up.
Yeah.
Something smells. I'm doing this. Something smells. I'm for people or audio listeners. I'm doing a stank face because something stank. Last one, the Carolina Hurricanes can live with Antti Raanta as their starting goalie for the rest of the playoffs.
See,
go ahead.
I don't think that's an overreaction. I watched the beginning of that game and just watching Boston just live in Carolina's end. And just like seeing like how frantic things were. And I'm like, wow, okay, this like it's like, you know, when you watch those games where like a team is just like going and going and going, and it's like eventually like one goal is going to go and then the dams is going to break. Exactly. And I think for a team like Carolina that has this system, I think they can still do it, even if it's Antti Raanta the entire way. I think we've seen this Carolina Hurricanes team, you know, overcome things, maybe not in the same stratosphere as this, but I think they've they've done enough so far to get the benefit of the doubt. And again, I believe in their players. I believe in the system that they have. And I believe that they're not going to take, I guess, this goaltending situation. And for lack of better words, use that as an excuse, I guess, to give up on a series or to lose a series. So yeah, I think that they can still do it. We know whether it's Antti Raanta in net, whether it's Frederik Andersen in net, I think they have the players in the system to get it done either way.
Yeah, I've said it a million times. I think Carolina protects its goaltenders better than any other team, save for maybe Colorado. It doesn't really matter who's in net sometimes. But looking back last, it wasn't 2 years, just last year, I guess, with Alex Nedeljkovic. And when I was watching him, I was realizing, like, he's actually not good enough to win the Stanley. Like, he's not, his numbers are great, but something's not, like, this doesn't really make sense. It doesn't make sense that he's rocking a 935 save percentage. Like, what is going on? It's because they insulate their goaltenders really well. But in the end, he wasn't good enough. And I don't know if Antti Raanta is good enough. I haven't seen Antti Raanta play enough hockey in the last couple of years to really know for sure. I think it might come back to bite them, but I also think they could live with pretty average goaltending for a really long time until they're really tested by whoever it might be. And Boston, you know, they were good for the first half of the game, but they didn't really test them the way Carolina needs to be tested in order to beat a goaltender like Antti Raanta. So I think it'd go a little, pretty far, but I think they're going to need Freddie back eventually.
Okay. Did you know Carolina outscored Boston 21-2 in their four regular season meetings this year?
Wow.
21-2.
Pretty wild.
That is insane.
Yeah, maybe they should have tried to win that last game so they could have faced us instead. Oh, sorry. I'm knocking on so much wood. It was a joke.
He promised to keep his composure, and then he just did that.
It was.
Right, I don't know what that was at the end. A little,
yeah,
right.
Like a self drum roll thing. I don't know. What that
considering the contents of this episode with moaning, I don't know about knocking on wood here. I think you're teetering a little too close to explicit content here. We need to behave ourselves.
It's an innuendo full episode here.
So. Oh, absolutely. Like I said, Justin, I know you're a Brampton man, so I know how things go down, but I did not expect you to tip the boat, my guy.
Oh my god, this episode is hilarious.
Yes, you evidently you do. Evidently you do. Okay, we've done enough here on Zone Time for this week. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode, provided the powers that be don't think we're too saucy to do these episodes. But hey, maybe people like us being saucy, but maybe we shouldn't overdo it anyway. Thank you. Check out In the Mentions with Omar. Check out the broadcast with Sam and the rest of the crew there. Check out the Yahoo Sports Hockey podcast with Justin Cuthbert. I know Rehef is not doing stuff with Yahoo, but she has her own show with Game Over with the SDPN. So we gotta show her some love as well. And Avery's covering the Oilers King series, so we gotta show him some love too. Doing this
great
work
follow,
for the hockey
great follow
news.
Ahead, great follow ahead of this playoff round.
Well, absolutely.
And Avery's hilarious. Yo, listen, man. If Mike Smith does that again, I think Avery would delete his account.
Yo, the amount of patois that would be flying at that arena. You're just gonna hear Mike Smith do something. You're just gonna hear an expletive come through the mic, and everyone's gonna be like, "What was that?" Like Omar and I are just gonna nod our head, like, All right, we've done enough. We'll be back next week. Here's to Ray Ferraro moaning one more time.